So my talk is called The Dharma Jewel and the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. So the Dharma is the teaching of the Buddha. And it's a jewel because it's precious. And the Parinibbana Sutta is the sutta describing the last days, or actually it's the last weeks of the Buddha's life, and it includes many of his teachings. And particularly precious in the Parinibbana Sutta, of course, are the last words of the Buddha, the very last words before he died. So the last words in Pali are Vaya Dharma Sankara Apamadena Sampadetha. And this means, I'm going to give you several translations, conditioned things are perishable, with vigilance strive to succeed, all conditioned things are impermanent, with mindfulness strive, and lastly, all conditioned things are of the nature of decay, strive on untiringly. So, sort of in simple terms, we could say that this last message of the Buddha is saying, see the conditioned nature of all things. So develop insight, see the conditioned nature, and then practice my teachings that will lead you to enlightenment. So it's like insight, develop insight, and practice. So we practice Buddhist ethics, we practice meditation, we practice the foundations of mindfulness, we develop loving kindness, we practice the Eightfold Path, and all these teachings actually are found in the Parinibbana Sutta. And over the year, because we've taken the theme of the Parinibbana Sutta, because at the LBC it's the year of spiritual death, we thought we would have this sutta as our main sort of overall thing for the year. We will be going into more depth into those practices over the year. But my talk specifically is going to be more about the first bit, seeing into the nature of conditioned existence, seeing that all conditioned things are impermanent. And because they're impermanent, they can cause us suffering. So, of course, we mustn't forget the positive side of impermanence as we contemplate the decay side of impermanence. So, in a way, if it wasn't for impermanence, we couldn't change and grow. So, that wouldn't be very good. And then, of course, there's the beauty of impermanence, the beauty that we find in nature. Much of that beauty is because nature's changing the whole time, and it's we experience that impermanence as we see and experience the beauty. And also, there is a great beauty, and it's uplifting, the impermanence that we often experience through the arts. So often arts sort of, in a way, they can capture impermanent sort of moments of experience. And I was actually thinking about that last night. Last night our whole community, the six of us, six women, we live together, we went to a concert, and I suppose because I'd been thinking about this talk, writing this talk, as we were listening to the music, I was just so aware that it's like each note, each sort of sound experience that we were having is totally unique and impermanent. It's gone. It's just as the music is flowing, it's gone. But that's part of the magic of it. So, as Vanaraji said earlier, the stream entrant, the person who basically it's incapable of them falling back from the spiritual quest to enlightenment. They're absolutely certain to attain enlightenment, has unwavering faith in the Dharma. So Vanaraji talked about the unwavering faith in the Buddha. So I'm drawing more on developing that unwavering faith in the Dharma. And in this bit of text from the Parinirvana Sutta, this is what it is said about the Dharma. It is well proclaimed by the Buddha. It's visible here and now. It's timeless. It's of the nature of a personal invitation. It's progressive, and it's to be understood individually by the wise. So I'm actually only just going to pick one of these things to then sort of lead into my talk. And that is, I'm going to say it in Pali, which is akaliko, which is that the Dharma is timeless. So if it's the Dharma, it's going to be timeless. It's totally free from time. And in a way, I want to put to the test, if we're looking at impermanence, is it a timeless truth? Is it that all conditioned things are subject to the nature of decay and therefore can cause us suffering? And therefore we should take up the invitation to practice the Buddha's Dharma. So is impermanence, it's known as one of the marks of conditioned existence, which is called a lakshana. Is it an eternally valid principle, as valid now as it was in the Buddha's time, which is 2,500 years ago? So I'm now going to draw again on a different part of the Parinirvana Sutta, and we're going to meet somebody called Ambapali. So she appears in the Parinirvana Sutta, and she meets the Buddha in the Parinirvana Sutta. And at that time, when she meets the Buddha, she's living in a city called Vaishali. And she's a courtesan. But her history, actually, is that she started life as an abandoned child. And she was found in a mango grove. And the translation for mango is amber. So that she was named Ambapali. And it was a grove that was owned by a Lichavi ruler, which is a particular sort of tribe. And Ambapali grew up, and she was particularly beautiful and charming in character and everything. And several of the Lichavi princes, they wanted to marry her. So they were all squabbling and fighting over Ambapali. And it was actually decided that none of them would have her exclusively, but that she would become a lady of pleasure at the court. So that was her fate. She became a courtesan. In the Parinirvana Sutta, we sort of get a bit more of an introduction to her. And in a way, it's not so much, this bit isn't so much on the theme of impermanence, but maybe just hearing this story, it sort of warm us up before we really face the nature of conditioned existence. So this is just a bit of a story from the sutta. So Ambapali, she heard that the Buddha was coming to, had arrived at Vaishali, and he'd actually gone to what had become her mango grove. So the Buddha, with all a whole company of monks, was in the mango grove. So she immediately thought she wanted to go and see the Buddha. So she drove out to the mango grove, and she got there. She was very respectful of the Buddha. She did the traditional thing, saluting him and sitting to one side of him. And the Buddha taught her the Dharma. It doesn't actually say what the Buddha taught her, but the chances are it was something like the threefold path, which is the path of ethics, meditation, and wisdom, which is repeatedly, throughout the Parinibbana Sutta, is repeatedly quoted, and that's what the Buddha taught. So Ambapali was really delighted by this teaching, and she invited the Buddha and his whole company of monks to come to the next day's meal at her home. And she's a courtesan, but the Buddha consented, and he said, yes, I will come to a meal at your home. So she drove home. But on her way driving home, she crossed paths with all the Lichavi princes, because they'd also heard that the Buddha had arrived. So it says that they met axle to axle. So their two chariots met. And the Lichavis were like, well, what are you doing here? And she said, well, I've been to pay my respects to the Buddha, and I've invited him for tomorrow's meal, and he's coming for the meal. And they were actually most put out, because they wanted the Buddha to come to them for a meal. So they tried to bargain with her. They bargained, said, well, we'll give you 100 pieces, we'll give you 10,000 pieces if you'll give the meal to us. But Ambapali basically said, this meal is too important to me. Even if you offered me the whole of Vaishali, I would not give up this meal. So the Lichavis went to visit the Buddha, and the Buddha kept to his they asked the Buddha if he'd come for a meal, but he said no, he already had a prior date, as it were. And so the Lichavis were really put out, and it says that they clicked their fingers, they snapped their fingers, and said, we've been beaten by the mango woman. But I think an interesting bit of it is that the Buddha, he did not discriminate. He was as open to a courtesan as he was to some very finely, these very, very rich princes who invited him as well. So that's the story, or part of the story, that's in the Mahaparinirvana Sutta. But I'm now going to go on a bit further into Ambapali's life. Because what happened was, so at that time she was this young, beautiful, charming courtesan. But life moved on. She had a child. Her child grew up. She was probably middle-aged by this time. And her son actually became a disciple of the Buddha, became a monk. And he was teaching a discourse on the Dharma, and Ambapali heard it. And at that point in her life, she decided she wanted to give up the home life and go into homelessness and become a nun. So once her son had grown up, she became a nun and a disciple of the Buddha. She practiced, don't know how many years she practiced for, and she gained enlightenment. But the thing about Ambapali is that what she Her particular practice was meditating on impermanence, and it was particularly meditating on the impermanence of the body and how the body can break down and sort of old age, sickness, death. Those were her practices. And there are some verses that she wrote, no, she didn't write them, sorry. She sung them, that are written down later on in the Terigatha, which are the songs of the Buddhist nuns. So I'm just going to read some of these verses, and just to say that I think in her meditating on, you know, she was this beautiful young woman, and her aging process, there's a sort of lightness and a humour, because she's let go, she's gained enlightenment. So I hope you can hear that in her verses, and also in her verses, just her devotion to the Buddha. My hair was black, the colour of bees, each hair ending in a curl. Now, on account of old age, it has become like fibres of hemp. Not otherwise is the word of the speaker of the truth. Formerly, my eyebrows were beautiful, like crescents, well painted by an artist's hand. Now, on account of old age, they droop down, lined by wrinkles. Not otherwise is the word of the speaker of the truth. Formerly, my two breasts were beautiful, swollen, round, compact, and high. Now they just hang down and sag, like a pair of empty water bags. Not otherwise is the word of the speaker of the truth. Such is this body, now decrepit, the abode of many kinds of suffering. It is nothing but an aged house, from which the plaster has fallen off. Not otherwise is the word of the speaker of the truth. Attended by millions of creatures, I went forth in the conqueror's teaching. I have attained the unshakable state. I am a true daughter of the Buddha. So those are just some of her verses. So I suppose my question, is it still true today that impermanence of youthful beauty and health of the body, is it still true? Well, I think yes. Is it still true today that we suffer from this kind of impermanence? Yes. So I've got a few visual aids. I like to have... I just suddenly thought, you know, I've always found giving talks difficult. I'm more of a visual person, so I suddenly thought, well, let's have some visual aids to help the process. So I was thinking, well, maybe I should have given this talk an 18 certificate. not because of sex and violence in it, but more just because I'm inviting you directly to contemplate impermanence, old age, sickness, death, and loss. So, what am I going to get out of this box? It's a bit of an odd object, and I was given it on my 11th birthday by my grandmother. And I must say, I was a little bit, it seemed a bit odd to me. you might wonder what on, you know, I'm an 11-year-old girl. I saw a little, there was a little card in the box I'd forgotten, and she put the date on it, and I was 11 when I got this. So it's actually a riding crop. It's incredibly well made, and it hasn't deteriorated at all, as far as I can see. And it's a girl's riding crop. It was actually my mother's, probably when she was 11. And so this makes it about 70 years old. It's 70 years old. It's got my mother's hair on the end. So it hasn't, it's still brown and curly, still got spring in it. But the odd thing, I suppose, why it was strange for me to receive it, is that my mother died when I was 3. So, of course, my grandmother was giving it to me. It was a very precious object to her because she'd lost her daughter. And she was giving it to me. You know, she didn't want me to forget my mother. So I think I'll just put it on the shrine. So that's my first visual aid. What else did I want to say about it? Oh yes, well, I just wanted to say about my grandmother that in a way she gave me that object, but also she gave me many other things. And in terms of like sharing with me, you know, the magic of the natural world. She loved sharing the magic of the natural world, which again, I'm just making that link back to the beauty of impermanence. And she loved the arts and crafts, and particularly introduced me to the visual arts. But as a young girl, in a way, I had no option but to contemplate impermanence. Whether I was given objects like that, I grew up gradually knowing that my mother had died. And yeah, so as I went into teenage, I had big questions like, what was the point in life? Because I knew we were all going to die. So I was of a reflective nature. My sister was completely different. She didn't have those questions. But for me, my particular character, I was of a reflective nature, but I was also had a tendency towards getting very depressed about it. Like, what's the point? We're just going to die. So thank goodness I found the Dharma in my late 20s. So I carried on contemplating impermanence. So I have another object coming out of the box, which now is my hair. So I knew I had this object. So at some point, I chopped off a curl of my hair, which is very similar to what my mother's was like, brown, curly, seems a bit more bouncy. But I suppose the big contemplation is what's happened. So I think this better go on the shrine as well. So this is really what I'm inviting you to contemplate. So I remember watching my godmother, who was a contemporary of my mother's, and a close friend of hers. I remember watching her as she aged, as she, you know, gradually went grey, became old. She's now 80. My mother would have been 80 now. You know, just realising, you know, my mother never went grey because she died when she was 32. It's amazing how hair doesn't go grey when it's been chopped off, because that hair is, you know, 70 years old. So Yes, so where does all this contemplation of impermanence of the body take us if we're not to sink into despair? So for me, I'm not sure that, like Ambapali, meditation on old age, the aging process, would really work for me. I think it's as if I can take so much of it, but then I sort of slip into depression. So I'm going to go back to the Parinirvana Sutta, and we're going to see what the Buddha's got to say about this, see if there's anything more. So, in this sutta, we meet the Buddha a bit later on in the sutta. We meet the Buddha, he's about 80, and he's travelling from place to place with Ananda. So for 20 years, his close companion was Ananda, who was his cousin, and really good friend. So they were going from place to place. The Buddha was teaching, and Ananda, it said that Ananda remembered everything that the Buddha said. So after the Buddha's death, Ananda basically recalled everything the Buddha was said, and then it was learnt by the monks and nuns. And then a few hundred years later, it was then written down. So it was in oral tradition at first, and it's said to be the memory of Ananda, so we need to be very grateful to him. So we've got these two old men in their 80s, and the Buddha gets sick. And during the rains, the Lord was attacked by a severe illness with sharp pains, as if he was about to die. But he endured all this mindfully, clearly aware and without complaining. He thought, "It is not fitting that I should attain final nirvana without addressing my followers and take leave of the order of monks. I must hold this disease in check by energy and apply myself to the force of life." He did so, and the disease abated. So the Buddha endured his sickness mindfully. So he experienced pain, but he was clearly aware of it, which means that he wasn't pushing the pain away. He was just in the present moment with it. And because he wasn't reacting to it, sort of thinking that the body was other than it is, he had no reason to complain. There was no reason to complain. It was just what was happening to his body. He was mindful and aware. Now, I'm just very aware that when I'm ill, a lot of energy goes into wishing it wasn't as it was, and reacting to feeling unwell. And that can often lead to going into a bad mood. But recently I was on solitary, and I had an experience of just the spaciousness of the solitary giving me an opportunity to experience, have a different response to being ill. So basically I caught myself just about, basically I was getting into the solitary retreat, and you know, I sort of dropping into enjoying my meditation more, and then I got ill, and I just caught my mind sort of going, "Oh no, but I want to get into my meditation," and it's much more difficult when you're ill. And I just sort of caught that habitual pattern, and I just let go. I just let myself be how I was, within a few, it happened very quickly. It was just a very particular experience. I let go, and then a few minutes later, a poem just sort of it was sort of just the energy came up and emerged, and an experience from a previous meditation seemed to just form into a few little lines. And I hadn't thought about writing, I mean, I can't really call it a poem, but it was a something. I hadn't thought about writing anything, but it just appeared out of that energy of letting go. So it might be, oh, well, I couldn't meditate, but I could sort of jot down little experiences. And I was just very struck by that when you let go, you're leaving space for something new to come in. So when the Buddha was enduring his sickness mindfully, I mean, his thought, what came up for him was what he needed to do before he died. And his energy sort of really got behind that, and his disease abated so that he could do what he needed to do before he died. So mindfulness is a key for being with old age sickness. But I still feel I need some more answers when it comes to death and loss, impermanence, particularly in relation to other people. So I'm now going to quote from a very moving passage from the Parinirvana Sutta, which I love, and it's quite well known. And it's basically around the Buddha's response to Ananda's grief. So it's how the Buddha responded to Ananda. And next week we're going to be in study groups, and we'll actually study, have a chance to talk about this passage more. So I'll just say a few things about it. So basically the Buddha has told Ananda that he's going to pass away that night. And Ananda cannot hold back his grief. So I'll just read you a bit of this. And the venerable Ananda went into his lodgings and stood lamenting, leaning on the doorpost. Alas, I am still a learner with so much to do. The teacher is passing away, who was so compassionate to me. Sometimes that line is translated, the teacher who was so kind. And the Buddha becomes aware that Ananda has gone off, is not around, so he asks about him. So that goes on. Then the Lord inquired of the monks where Ananda was, and they told him. So he said to a certain monk, go, monk, and say to Ananda from me, friend Ananda, the teacher summons you. Very good, Lord, said the monk, and he did so. Very good, friend, Ananda replied to that monk, and he went to the Lord, saluted him, and sat down at one side. So then the Buddha sort of gives Ananda the teaching. So this is the bit that I'm going to read the whole passage of the teaching of the Buddha's response. And the Lord said, enough, Ananda, do not weep and wail. Have I not already told you that all things that are pleasant and delightful are changeable, subject to separation and becoming other? So how could it be, Ananda, since whatever is born, become, compounded, is subject to decay? How could it be that I should not pass away? For a long time, Ananda, you have been in the Tathagata's presence, showing loving kindness in acts of body, speech, and mind. Beneficially, blessedly, wholeheartedly and unstintingly. You have achieved much merit. Ananda, make the effort, and in a short time you will be free from the corruptions. So when I first read this, I thought that the Buddha was rather sort of firm and unemotional with Ananda, when he said, enough, Ananda, do not weep and wail. But I suppose we must remember that Ananda was a long way along the spiritual path. He was sort of poised to gain insight. And the Buddha really knows Ananda very well. He's a very good friend of his. And I think probably from where we are, we need a stage of grief. If somebody, if we lose something or somebody very dear to us. So we have to be patient and mindful and go through those stages of grief. But at some point, we will be able to hear the Buddha's words. So at some point, we will hear the universal law that the Buddha's trying to tell Ananda, trying to help him by telling him that. And I think we sort of, we hear the dispassionate quality of the Buddha. He has a great concern for Ananda. He cares a lot for him. But he expresses, he not only wants Ananda to gain enlightenment, he wants enlightenment for all living beings. So it's like the Buddha doesn't say, where did I write that? Don't weep and, you're weeping and wailing, Ananda. He doesn't say, I'm going to miss you too, basically. he has this more dispassionate response that's an imperturbable quality of the Buddha's enlightenment. And this also comes up when he's talking to Ananda a little bit earlier, when Ananda's asking about funeral arrangements, and the Buddha says, do not worry yourself about the funeral arrangements, Ananda. You should strive for the highest goal. Devote yourself to the highest goal and dwell with your mind tirelessly, zealously devoted to the highest goal. So that's what he's wanting for Ananda, for the sake of all living beings. So I come to my last visual aid. Just about enough time. And this is a bone mala. So it's a Buddhist mala, but it's made, all the beads are made out of bone. And surprisingly, I find, particularly these long bits that really are bony bits, I find them incredibly comforting, just as you're going along the mala, just feeling the bone and the texture of it. So I sometimes think of this mala, it's a bit like, instead of, we often chant a mantra and go around the mala, it's a bit like the Buddha's words. So it's like touching the bone is like hearing these words of the Buddha. And I myself am quite capable of, sort of standing by the doorpost and weeping and wailing. Well, not weeping and wailing, but being miserable. So it's like this is something comforting. So it could be, the words could be being said to me. So it could be, enough, Shubha, do not weep and wail. Have I not already told you that all things that are pleasant and delightful are changeable, subject to separation and becoming other? And how could it be, Shubha, since whatever is born, become, compounded, is subject to decay. How could it be that it should not pass away? So it's like words on the mala. I'll keep this here. So I think for us there's a first stage, which is grief, however long that takes. And then the second stage, when we're ready, can be to actually reflect on impermanence. So in this case, it's the Buddha saying, I'm going to die. So really taking that in. It's for Ananda to really take that in. The Buddha is going to die. But then I think there's a third stage, which is what happens, what the Buddha is saying at the end of this passage, which is, make the effort, and in a short time you will be free of the corruptions. So the Buddha affirms Ananda's practice. He says, you've gone a long way, but then he says, make an effort. And I think there's no getting away from the fact that the unenlightened mind, we're going to have to make an effort. We've really got no choice. We need to practice loving kindness, mindfulness of body, speech and mind. And we do that beneficially, blessedly, wholeheartedly and unstintingly. So if I slump into it's not fair and go round in a negative mental state, it's really not going to go anywhere. So I just need to stop. When you notice you're going round in a negative state, you could just stop and think, well, what practice, what could I do? What particular practice could I do? And then I think there's a fourth element, which is that if we're going to really let go of something that is big for us and realize impermanence, you know, it might be letting go of a relationship or you've lost somebody in some way or another. We actually need somewhere or something, we need a refuge, somewhere to go with that open heart. And I think what we find is the Buddha, or what we can find is the Buddha. We can see something true that we can aspire to. So we can see the Buddha's qualities, and we get glimpses, maybe, of what the enlightened mind is, the mind that is completely free of clinging. So in this sutta, what happens next, which we'll study next week, I'm not going to read it now, but is that the Buddha rejoices in Ananda. So he gives him this quite strong teaching, and then he rejoices in his qualities in front of all the monks. And in fact, the whole passage, really we're meeting the Buddha. First of all, we meet Ananda telling us that he's been so kind to him, that the Buddha's compassionate. We see his dispassion, his desire for all beings to be enlightened and free. We see him teaching the Dharma, we hear him teaching the Dharma, and we hear him rejoicing in Ananda's qualities. So you probably only have to read a few pages of this sutta and you could find some of the Buddha's qualities to connect with that we can aspire to. So this brings me back to the last words of the Buddha. Vaya Dharma Sankara Apamardena Sampadetha. So, all conditioned things are impermanent, with mindfulness strive. So basically, we can reflect deeply on impermanence in our own experience. How does impermanence manifest in our lives? And even let ourselves actually experience it, because often we sort of hold it off. So see where it manifests in our life and experience it. And then secondly, to practice the Dharma unstintingly. And then thirdly, these words are said by the Buddha. So we can take refuge in the Buddha and his qualities, and take refuge in his Dharma. So we have unwavering faith in the Buddha, we have unwavering faith in the Dharma, and we haven't quite got onto unwavering faith in the Sangha, which will be a talk coming up. So I just want to finish with something from one of our women elders in the order. Because I was reading, there's a newsletter that all order members that we get, and you can write reports into it. And this particular order member wrote in, and I thought, ooh, I'd really like to be able to read that as part of my talk. So I wrote to her, and I said, you know, could I quote from you? And I also asked her if she would be able to come and give one of the talks in our Women Elders series. And she said, yes, you know, do quote me in your talk, but I probably won't make it to London to give a talk because my health isn't that good. So I'm just going to finish my talk by reading Ratnasuri's words from... She wrote this a couple of months ago. I have been musing about death as becomes an 88-year-old. Why do we die? Except there are no whys. We just do. And we need to think what it would be like if we did not. Impermanence is not just here for the flowers. Life would not be life without death in its wake. So let us live our life to the full. We cannot be permanent, so let us live as well as we can, trying to look through the Buddha's eyes.